Whether you've been here before or you never left, don't let your time slip away. It's the worst kind of theft. You don't get any return sitting wallowing in shame. It's time to put in work, bringing greatness to your name. It takes focus and dedication. We're not talking about luck. Gotta keep moving forward. Welcome to Coming Unstuck. Hello, friends. Welcome to Coming Unstuck, a Step Up to Greatness podcast. Our goal here is to help you overcome that stuck feeling by rebooting your mindset, your health, and even your career. I'm your host and greatness facilitator, Dustin Gruss. We are back with another interview episode, and today's guest is certainly familiar with the idea of feeling stuck, as he once believed suicide was his only answer. But instead, Archie Messersmith Bunting, otherwise known as The Feelings Guy, is a mental wellness coach, consultant, and professional speaker. This mental health champion helps people discover how leading with their feelings can improve their quality of life and even save the lives of those they come into contact with. Archie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited for your story. As you heard in my intro, the idea is overcoming that feeling of being stuck. And you've had quite the journey to get to where you are now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story of living for what is many the dream of performing in New York City, and how it turned into a nightmare where you almost took your life?
Yeah, sure. And I will try to give a somewhere in between a Lifetime movie and a Reader's Digest version, so that we're not here until next Wednesday. So I grew up in small town Alabama, and I grew up in a very religious household. And definitely my first trauma in life was knowing that I was gay, but also knowing that that wasn't okay. And not only that it wasn't okay, I was told that I was going to go to hell every couple of weeks or months at church. And that is very traumatizing to a young child. So through my childhood, through my teenage years, I was battling this internal demon of knowing what the truth was, but also knowing that truth, especially when I was growing up, because we're talking about, this is like late 80s, early 90s, would not have been accepted, right? So I'm living with this, and I there's all this ish inside, and I end up going to a private Southern Baptist university. They had a wonderful music program because I was going to be a voice major. But also, I was convinced that I had tried everything else in the world to fix this gay thing. And that surely the one place that could make it go away and de-gay me would be a private Southern Baptist university. Well, that did not work. And I'm still paying for that choice. Literally, I'm still paying off student loans from this very expensive school. I did have a great experience, and so I'm not negating the experience, but it was a very expensive attempt to fix something that is not fixable and does not need fixing. But I went to the school, I started performing professionally when I was a junior in college. I was cast in my first professional summer stock program, and that's when I began to make connections in New York. And so when I graduated from college, I got a music education degree because my parents were one of those people that were like, well, won't you have something to fall back on? So I got this education degree. And then when I was student teaching, this very prominent school system in Alabama wanted to hire me. So I taught high school for a year, and then I graduated and moved to New York City to be a performer. And that is really when my journey to and my path of addiction began. I did not know this at the time, obviously, because I know so much more about addiction and recovery and how it works. But, you know, really, drugs are not the problem. Drugs and alcohol weren't my problem. That was the symptom of the problem. My problem was that I had so much hurt and pain inside, and so much internalized homophobia, and so much, you know, you're not going to love me, or they're not going to love me, or like all those things, that the first time I ever tried drugs, it made all that go away. It was a Band-Aid for all of that. Drugs were a Band-Aid. So I for a year or two, I was able to be a functioning addict, and I was able to keep it together and, you know, still perform and still go on tours, national tours, and, you know, cruise ships and perform in New York and things like that. Eventually the drug use got bigger than me. And I became an IV drug user. And once you cross that threshold, there's really no, there's no going up from there. So I overdosed numerous times. One of those times I woke up in ICU, having to have a tube pulled out of my throat, with the people telling me that I had died the night before. And it got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, until I stood on that cliff that I call suicide, and I stared out in the darkness and I wondered if that was my answer. And I took a step, but I was not successful. And soon after that was when I really began to try to save my life and, fight a day at a time until I finally, you know, was able to put some time together and stop putting a needle in my arm. So, yeah.
So, obviously there's a lot to unpack there. you dealt with that homophobia and worrying that people were going to just hate you and not be able to love you for the reason. And then it came to where you tried to take your life, where then you just said you were trying to save yourself. Mm-hmm. What kind of assistance or help or support did you have in that coming back from that cliff?
Sure. Yeah. So before I say this, I also want to say everyone has to find their own path. So if you're listening to this and you think you might have a problem with drugs or alcohol, I personally went to a 12-step program. That's where I started. It's not where I ended. I started with a 12-step program. Then I added outpatient therapy. Then I added inpatient therapy. Then I did more programs and I did more intensive therapy. Then I went to another rehabilitation center. So there are many paths to find whatever your answer is. I guess the good news, the tragic flaw of alcoholism and addiction is that it manifests the same way in everyone. It manifests the same way, but the way that we fix it is the way you have to fix it for yourself. So those were the tools that I used. But I mean, really, you know, if we're talking about coming unstuck, the magic and the miracle of recovery didn't happen until I finally started being honest. I went to two rehabs, as I mentioned, and I didn't talk about the suicide attempt or the fact that I hear voices in my head or any of that stuff until my second one. I was ashamed. So I was like, and it's kind of bonkers if you think about it. Like, you know, I'm as broken as you possibly can get, but like, let me keep this stuff back because this is really bad. It was the surrender didn't really happen until the second time around when I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Like, this isn't working. And, I even tried the suicide route and that didn't work. So like, what are we going to do here? And that's, and I don't say that flippantly. I say that, seriously, that's how I felt. And so that's when the surrender happened for me.
And again, to unpack what you originally started with, dealing with your being gay at a very young age and it coming from a very religious background and even going to religious school, how much did religion play a part in your recovery at all, if at all? Like, I know in a lot of recoveries, mm-hmm. That they tend to turn to, mm-hmm. you know, either biblical or even they tell you to focus on things like as universal power, not necessarily God, but universal power.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal question. And listen, I'll be very transparent. It was very tough in the beginning. It was very tough to go into a room and see these two big banners on the wall and the word God is all over it, like mm-hmm. everywhere. And it wasn't that I like hated or resented God. I resented the people that use God as a weapon against me. That's who I resented. I resented the people that like pick and choose passages of the Bible. I love my pick and choose Christians. You're like, I'm going to pick this passage, but I'm going to ignore this one. I'm like, that's not how this works. So that's who I resented. It wasn't God per se, because I knew there had to be something out there, or there is zero chance that I would still be sitting here. I mean, there's, you know, when I was in college, I was going to sing at this Christmas thing. I was completely sober. I didn't drink in college. And I drove my Blazer off a cliff. And the car happened to land right between this enormous boulder and this huge rock. So, I mean, like, there are many times when I just should not be here. So, I mean, there had to be something. But it was definitely a barrier at the beginning, if I'm being truthful. When I met the guy that became my sponsor, who really helped save my life, he just pushed me through it. I mean, he was just like, no, we're not doing this. We're not getting hung up on this thing. There's more than this. And that's really what I needed, because I'm quite stubborn. I hadn't prayed in a long time. And you know, that's definitely part of the program. And I was, you know, the way that he was delivering the program, like, here's what we're going to do. And I still lived in New York City. And I remember we were walking to this meeting and he had his keys, and I didn't really realize he dropped them on purpose. I mean, I thought he just dropped his keys, but he was on his phone. He's like, hey, can you pick my keys up? And so I went to pick his keys up and he pushed me down and he was like, all right, we're going to pray. And he got on the sidewalk beside me. And I was like, right here? He was like, let's just do it. Let's just rip the bandaid off and pray. And I was like, oh dear Lord. But I mean,
well, see, he got you right there.
I know, dear Lord. I know, it worked. So, you know, I eventually began to work through it and realize that it, you know, for higher power, God, whatever you call it, it really was the people that were my issue, and the organization of the people, not actually God.
Absolutely. You know, and I could tell you myself that's an issue I deal with as being a Christian, is not people being gay. It's rather, like you said, people being a pick and choose Christian, the things that they want to follow and the things that they don't. And when, you know, our greatest order is to love thy neighbor and stuff. And to know that people are using God to hate other people for whatever reason is something that I struggle with as a Christian, because it's like, well, I don't want to be affiliated with that if that's how they're using it. Like, I just want people to be happy, and, you know, and whatever that means to them, you know, with, as long as it's not doing harm to other people, obviously. But then I can tell you, like, it's, you know, that's something that we've struggled with in our own church, where we go, and you know, it's been a big issue. But, you know, it's, for me, it's going to come down to your personal relationship with God and your personal relationships with other people. So,
yeah, no, man, I really appreciate you saying all that, because it's you know, I have some friends from my school who, well, I guess we're not really friends anymore, who, you know, they are not a fan of my life and my quote choices. And I'm like, okay, sure. Right. But the thing that really, I mean, this gets me going every time, is and sometimes I do it to be confrontational. I'm going to be really honest. But if someone is being is using God as a weapon, I ask them, you know, can you tell me about that, you know, that sin, love the sinner, hate the sin. Can you remind me of where that is in the Bible? And usually they're like, oh yeah, it's like in James or Mark or something. And I'm like, oh, is it really? And what's fascinating to me is that Christians and pastors who use that quote in the sermon misuse it and don't know where it came from and don't actually know what it says. It came from Gandhi. I mean, it's obviously nowhere in the Bible, but the actual quote says, hate the sin and not the sinner is a precept which, though easy enough to understand, is rarely practiced. And that is why the poison of hatred spreads in the world. So, like, he literally says, if you really unpack it, like, this is not something we can do or humans do, and that is why hatred spreads. But, like, Christians, for some reason, have decided to take that first part, like, hate the sin and not the sinner, and turning into love the sinner, not, you know, hate the sinner, love the sin, whatever, what they say. And they don't even use the whole quote. And it gets me going every time. because it's like you're once again using something against me that, number one, you don't even know where it came from, and number two, you're not even talking about the entire point of the quote. I mean, Gandhi ends that passage by saying, "To slight a single human being is to slight those divine powers, and thus to harm not only that being, but with him the whole world." I mean, can we use the whole quote?
Right, right. It's like you're trying to, I don't know, you're in politics or the news or something and trying to frame it wrong and not use the whole quote. And that's frustrating. So I love that you know all that information. You have the whole quote memorized and everything, that you're able to use that. And so that's good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like, are you a West Wing fan?
Back in the day. Yeah.
Do you remember the episode with the president, and I think she was supposed to be playing a version of Dr. Laura, and he just like, he was like, you know, you have to stand, and then he like laid out all the stuff about the Bible. I mean, I remember watching that in real time and being like, yes! I mean, that's the best of Bartlett's speech ever. But it's so true. It's so true that, you know, for some reason, we have chosen this thing of like homosexuality, that, you know, you can be divorced 45 times. I mean, and you know what? If you have an affair and you embezzle from the church, we're going to forgive you, but don't be a gay. I'm just like, where did that come from? Like, how did we pick this thing? It's bonkers to me, man. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously we went from you going through recovery to where you are now being a mental health champion. Why don't you tell us about how that journey came about?
Yeah, for sure. So I had been speaking professionally. I've been doing this for probably about a decade. People have been paying me in some way or other for about a decade. But over the past couple of years, I began to really kind of hone in on this health and safety, mental health lane. And my last job with a paycheck was at a place called the North American Interfraternity Conference. And I was their vice president of health and safety, and really got to kind of hone my chops, if you will, with students and alumni and adults all over the country. And so back in October of 2019, I was like, you know what? I think that starting a business in 2020 is going to be a good idea. So I left my job with a paycheck and with insurance and like all those things, that whole direct deposit. I don't know what that is anymore. In January, and decided to do this full time, because here's what I believe. Now, listen, I don't think that you have to have struggled with addiction to be a recovery speaker. I don't think that you have to have struggled with mental illness to be a mental. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is, I think there is some benefit in being able to say, I have been there. I just really think there is. And it drives me bonkers when people are like, I know how you feel. And I'm like, do you really? Do you really know how I feel? Or you want to empathize here? Or do you want to lie and say you know how I feel? Because you probably don't. So that is what I have seen in through this experience. And even though it was terrifying in, you know, March, April, May, when like I was not getting a dime. And we had, you know, at that point, our son, my husband and I adopted a son, and he was, I guess, one and a half at that point, and I was terrified. But, you know, my husband and I, we both believed in this message, and we both believed that I was really good at it. So instead of running away, I hate the word pivot. I hate it because all I see is that Friends episode with the couch. That's literally all I see every time people say pivot. But we doubled down, and I actually started a business and like formed an LLC because at that point I was just, you know, working through the agency that represents me in the college market. And so we're doing it. And I spend many nights, and I actually have a program this afternoon where I get really real with high school students, college students, and those in corporate America about mental illness, suicide prevention, and how to begin to actively care about other people.
Okay, hold up. I want to talk about something real quick. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. Like, how do I record an episode? How do I get my show into all the apps that people like to listen to podcasts on? How do I make money from my podcast? The answer to every one of these questions is really simple. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. As I mentioned, Anchor distributes your podcast to all the different platforms, such as Google, Apple, Spotify, and it has some great background music you can add to your podcast to give it a little extra flair. So if you've always wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start. I can't wait to hear your podcast. That's awesome. Quick question, bringing the gay topic back up, is do you find any of these schools, universities are homophobic? Do they know going in that you're gay? Or
yeah, I mean, I'm super gay and super, like, I mean, if we were filming live right now, behind me, I have the Golden Girls Funko characters on a bookshelf. And on the other bookshelf is my husband and me and our baby right after he was born. So, like, I am not playing. And you know what is really interesting is, you know, I've had some conversations with like assistant deans of students and deans of students at the Power Five conferences, but specifically the SEC. And one of my good friends, Gary, he says, you should not play well in the South. Like, you should just not. Like, this should not be something they want. But here's the truth. I think what even in the Bible Belt, I think what they are most drawn to is just how authentic and honest I am. Like, I'm not pulling punches. I'm not, you know, I am just 100% myself. I'm very transparent about my drug addiction. I'm very transparent about the suicide attempt. I'm very transparent about the fact that I've been diagnosed with major depressive disorder. And I don't say struggle. I say thrive with that. I thrive with that. But I really think that's what it is. So, no, I mean, are there people, are there guys, I'm sure, who are like this? I'm not going to say the word. Of course there are. That this is life and this is America, unfortunately. But it doesn't stop me, and I don't show up any different for a small school in Alabama than I would for a small school in California. And if you don't want that, then don't hire me.
Absolutely. And I think your message about being authentic is probably what draws people to, because, you know, of course you were living in New York City at the time of your major addiction and everything, but now we see with you know, there's addiction in the suburbs, there's, you know, there's suicide in the suburbs, there's all this is going on everywhere. So I think the, you know, it's going on in the South, it's going in the North, it's going in the East, it's going in the West, like all this is going everywhere. So I think your authentic message is what's so powerful. And I gotta be honest, like, you know, so far just talking to you, like, this has probably been one of my most fun interviews I've done so far, like just hearing how authentic and lively and just real you are. So this has been awesome so far. So thank you for being you.
Oh, thanks. That makes my day. But it really truly is, because even when I was able to put together periods of sobriety, even when I was able to work with my therapist and my physicians to help regulate my mental illness, I still wasn't waking up happy. And I was like, what is going on? Like, I did not fight back from the gates of hell for this. And I realized, so I went on this like period of self-discovery, and I realized that for me, it's because I still wasn't being authentic. I have a big personality, and I want to show up that way, but I was tempering it because I was like, well, what if they don't like me? What if they don't hire me? What if, and like when I threw all that away and said, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to lean into my feelings. That's when I realized that there was something there and that other people weren't doing it either. So when I work with, I have a program called Feelings-Based Leadership that I do a lot with corporations. And it's radically different than anything else I've ever been taught, because I mean, I was in corporate America in New York City, and like, we don't do feelings. Feelings is a sign of weakness, allegedly. And I teach the exact opposite, that especially where we are right now, you know, people blame a lot on the side effects of COVID. And listen, there have been many. But here's what I believe to be the case. I believe that all of these feelings we've all had, we've always had them. But because of the COVID, the coronavirus, because of the social uprising, because of all the political insanity is what I call it, all those feelings have been put into a pressure cooker and turned on high. So no one knows how to deal with them and listen to them and lean into them. And the worst thing you can do, in my opinion, and all the research I've read, is fight against your feelings. You got to lean in and listen. But I mean, when did you learn that in high school? Like, I never learned that. So, you know, in elementary school, we learn about the four food groups. We don't learn a thing about feelings. So right. I'm trying to pick up the slack there.
Yeah, because think about it, pretty much our whole education, like, we're learning the early stages of our life, you know, preschool, kindergarten, you know, maybe up till fourth, fifth grade, we're learning how to do things. But then after that, it really becomes a matter of, you know, learning math and then memorizing facts. It's no longer about really learning how to do things and how to process things and how to tap into our emotions. So what you're doing is awesome. What would, like, if someone is wanted to start taking this approach to lead with their feelings, what would you say the best place for them to start would be?
Yep. So it's super simple. So it all starts, and I'm actually on a personal mission. This has become like a personal mission of mine to change the way that we greet and interact with each other. So if we were to see each other on the street, you know, back in the days when we saw each other and we talked to people, and you were to say, "Hey, Archie, how you doing?" You absolutely expect me to say fine. Absolutely. And I absolutely expect to say fine. And let's just get even more granular. Dudes in general, being stereotypical. "Hey, what's up, man? How you doing? Good. How are you? Good. Good." Like, what has happened? Like, that was verbal diarrhea. Like, nothing happened. It's just this poop that we spit out of our mouth. So we have been conditioned from the earliest age to lie. We lie about our feelings upwards of 20, 30 times a day. And so you're like, "Oh, well, Archie, that's really no big deal. You're not really lying. You're just not actually being honest." Okay, well, that's actually a lie. So, and you know, and we do it in like a superficial way. So, I mean, I do this all the time now, but you're like, "Okay, Archie, I'm hearing you, but maybe I'm not going to buy in all the way." Okay, so the next time you're at Starbucks or Target or, you know, wherever you go, the Meijer, and they're like, "Hi, how are you doing today?" If you don't want to say, "Well, you know what, I'm happy today." And that's why when you asked me at the beginning of the question, I said, "I'm happy," because I try to reply with a feeling. That's just kind of a superficial, you know, interaction. And so, okay, but think about it. When you build up those superficial reactions 30 times a day, so let's say we're at home and for some reason, men in general, I don't understand why they don't understand that the dishes do not go in the left side of the sink. They go in the dishwasher. Like, I don't get it. But so, like, the dishes are once again in the left side of the sink. And I'm like, and Bill's like, "Honey, are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." Because that's what I've been trained to do. Well, that actually is an intimacy blocker. Fine is an intimacy blocker. So what I challenge people to do and how to begin to listen and pay attention to their feelings is to stop saying, "How are you today?" Instead say, "How are you feeling today?" Because when I ask you, "How are you feeling?" you actually have to stop and think for a second. I think I'm okay. But then I ask people to take it one step further and just to remove the word fine from your vocabulary. Fine is not a feeling. It is nowhere on a feeling chart. So, like, my son Cade is not being taught the word fine in pre-K. We are teaching him that as a society. So, like, remove it. And so even if somebody does say, "Hey, how are you doing today?" actually give them the answer of how you actually are feeling. So that's actually how you begin. And it's actually pretty simple, but I also think it's pretty dramatic in the way that it would adjust the way that we as human beings interact with each other.
Wow. That's such a simple switch to how are you to how are you feeling. I love that. It's so simple, but when you think about it, probably being in a moment, you have to consciously think to say that.
You do. And what it does is it lets the person that you're asking know that you actually care. When you say, how are you? How you doing, man? I'm assuming you're being polite. That's what I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. Now, you may be sincere, but that's not my lived experience. My lived experience and your lived experience, if we're being very transparent right now, that means you're being polite. So ask the question that actually gets them talking. And that's why I believe that by doing this, we can help save lives. Because suicide, in my opinion, and in the research, does not, like, the suicidal ideation is I call it like a spectrum, right? Like from the first time you consider it until the act, that could be like days, weeks, months. What would it mean if, you know, someone said, hey, how are you feeling today? I mean, literally, you could be the person that allows the emotional dam to break because you just cared. You just cared. And we need a lot of care in the world right now.
Absolutely. What are some other ways that you can help support people that are struggling?
Yeah, well, the first is just to listen. I mean, literally just listen. If someone, so let's say you are the person that does get the emotional dam to break, and that is a goal. Like if someone is bottling things up inside, we want them to get it out. Listen, y'all, listen clearly. They don't need your opinion. They don't need to become about you. And so what you do, and I'll put it on me for a second. I don't do this, but let's say it was me. If I began, because what happens is I start getting uncomfortable. So that is why we need to practice listening to our feelings. So that when that discomfort comes, you're like, no, I'm going to sit here. I'm going to be quiet. I'm just going to be quiet. Because the worst thing you can do is like, yeah, well, you know, one time this happened to me. And then all of a sudden it's about you. And the other person who is struggling in ways that you maybe not be able to understand is like, wait a minute. So we're not talking about me anymore? Like, don't give your opinion. Don't make it about you. And honestly, unless you're a trained clinician, don't give them advice. Just listen. Literally say things like, man, I had no idea, but I'm here now. Can I listen? And then just be quiet. And then if they do need help, like go with them, like, you know, go with them, help them, or just say, you know what, I'm going to be here. Now, let's flip that a second. I get asked a lot about, well, what if we know that someone's hurting? And we ask them and they're like, no, I'm good. I'm fine. Okay, great, great. Again, that's what they've been taught. So what I do, I say, okay, I hear what you're saying. I want you to hear me saying, I don't believe you and I'm not going to stop asking. Mm. And sometimes they're like, Archie, seriously, I promise I'm just having an off day, but let's talk tomorrow and I'll prove it to you. Like, because people know that, like, I'm not playing. I mean, listen, friend, last week I had two conversations with organizations and companies who someone in their organization or institution had died by suicide. So I'm not playing with this. This mental health is not something to play about. So they may say that, or they might say, okay, well, I prefer you not. Well, that's not up to you. I love you, and I'm going to ask again. And so I'll ask a few more times. And so one of two things is going to happen. Either their mood is going to improve, and maybe it's because they know somebody cares. You know, who knows if there's correlation. They're going to keep pushing you away, or they're going to begin to open up. And so I tell people, you know, after three or four times of me asking, and we're talking about in like rapid succession here, I still say the same thing. I might let it go for a day or two. But I keep my eye on it because, and then, you know, eventually I'll say, okay, listen, we'll say his name is Tom. Tom, we just need to level here. Your personality has completely changed. You went from being completely engaged to unengaged. You used to be here early. Now you're here late. Like something is happening and I want to help. And if you're not going to talk to me, will you promise me you're talking to someone? At some point, you know, the other human does have to take the action, but I want to do everything I can to be available for them and to let them know that, like, I see you. I see this is happening. How can I help you?
Hmm. Man, you just break it down. Like, I love your line of questioning and your follow-up. That's such awesome advice. And I really hope people are taking it to heart. Because, again, you know, this is happening everywhere.
Yeah.
It's suburbs, main, big cities, yep. country, wherever. It's happening everywhere, especially now with the pandemic yep. and stuff going on. I mean, people are dealing with some stuff. So make sure you're checking in on your family and friends. Yep. So, I've seen in some of your Instagram posts, you've brought a little bit of your stage life back to you. You'll sing a little tune and everything. And I'm not going to ask you to sing here. Don't worry.
I was like, oh my goodness, I did not warm up. This man's going to ask me to sing.
No. I'm not going to sing. But one question I have yeah. for you is, you know, for some people that have overcome addictions and things like that, they try to keep away from some of the
yeah.
areas that, yeah. you know, were a part of the addiction. Like, you know, alcoholics stay away from the bars, or sometimes they do the opposite. They throw themselves into, you know, the bar setting where maybe they're a bartender. They don't have to worry about drinking or anything yeah. like that. So, which yeah. is always astounding to me.
I know. I mean, do you know how many bartenders are actually sober? It is fascinating. It's fascinating. But yeah, it's astounding to me too.
Yeah. So, for me, like hearing that you are, you know, your story took you to the stages of, you know, New York City and traveling and stuff to where you're still singing and bringing that part. I got to imagine you're bringing it into your presentations that you're doing as well. Do you miss being on stage, like in that capacity as an actor, or is what you're doing now, you know, I guess pre-COVID, but what you're doing now with your presentations, like, is that still fulfilling for you and giving you the rush that you used to get from being on the stage before?
That's a great question. And I never get asked this question, but it's a really great, good question, because I think what's important people to hear is that if you had a dream and that dream is no longer present because of actions that you took. Let's just be clear. I am the person that took the drugs. I am the person that didn't show up for auditions and my agent sent me in for because I was high. Like, I made those choices. Doesn't matter that I'm an addict and have a disease. I still made those choices. I until I finally grieved for that, like actually grieved, I wasn't able to enjoy movie musicals, and I wasn't able to enjoy other people's success. You know, I still have friends that are out there doing it because it hurt too bad. And I had to like stop and literally purposely grieve for this chapter in my life that's no longer there. And when that happened, then some joy began to return, and the ability to, you know, sing a tune on Instagram every now and then, or, you know, I sing at home all the time, and Kate's like, stop, Papa, stop. And I'm like, okay, great. But I'm like, do you know how good I am? So I don't want to say to him, but you know, I stop. So I was able to find some joy in it again. Now, if I'm being very transparent, you know, sometimes if I see like a really good musical, which of course none of us have done in a while because we haven't been to live theater, there are still times that live theater is there brings a little bit of pain up, and I'm not sure that will ever go away, if I'm being really honest, but mm-hmm. but it's also okay, because it also is a reminder of where I am today. And I did not think that I would ever find anything that I loved as much as performing, because I loved it. But I love what I'm doing now. I love getting to see people get it. I love when people show up. I mean, I had this student leave a comment in one of the assessments from a program I did 2 weeks ago. He said, you know, I came because I had to, but man, I'm glad I stayed. That's way better than any standing ovation back in the day ever could have been. You know, I get dozens of DMs after programs of people sharing things with me that they've never shared before, and or like asking this or that, and that's a blessing to be able to show up in people's lives that way, because people are hurting, and to be able to help a little bit is amazing.
That's awesome. As far as the singing goes, and your son telling you to stop, my wife and I have the opposite issue where we have, we're actually foster parents and we have two little ones, a 1.5 year old that he loves singing Elmo song and he loves the theme song to Puppy Dog Pals.
Oh, puppy dog. Yeah.
And then he does the rough, rough, rough. And it's just, it's adorable. We love it. However, it's when we're singing Elmo's song and the way it ends, it's our dog that doesn't care for it too much. She starts howling along with us. And so it's kind of a fun little post to do every now and then with Instagram, like record us singing and the dog.
That's awesome. Although
my wife also thinks she's Whitney Houston and will sing I Always Love You. And the dog reminds her that she's not Whitney Houston. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So parent to parent here, let me warn you. Stay away from Cocomelon as long as you can.
I have no idea what that is. So gosh. I will.
Like, just don't.
I guess so far it's so good.
They do it. It's very educational. I get it. But oh my gosh. So now bedtime, we're like 30 minutes of Cocomelon and it's so much. It's just, and it's not, like maybe after this, just watch a little bit, but make sure no one is around. And you'll be like, oh, yep. No, I don't want to do this. Yeah. Stay away from Cocomelon.
The funnest part is as I'm changing the 1.5 year old and getting him ready for bed, and we have Amazon Echo like right there, on the change table, and I'll tell him to play Elmo's song, and there's a whole little intro where he's welcoming like the other guests from Sesame Street and stuff, and the first time you hear Elmo speak, and he just opens his mouth in shock, like, it's the cutest thing,
and
melting heart every time, so it's just a little fun being a parent. So, Archie, thank you so much for coming on. This was so much fun. We went over a little bit on time that you promised me, and I thank you for taking the time to share your message and this movement that you're such a big champion of. I love it. I appreciate you. Appreciate your story, your honesty, your transparency, just everything about you. I hope that my listeners have gotten a lot out of this. I hope that you continue to make the difference that you are on the stage and just in your post and just being who you are. I really appreciate you and everything you're doing.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks for the opportunity. And I hope that someone that listens to this finds one thing that you know they feel like that they can apply to live a better, happier life, and then all the time has been worth it.
Absolutely. And everyone, that's just a reminder to ask people not, hey, how are you? Ask them, how are you feeling today?
That's right.
And be honest with people about how you're feeling. Reach out, let them know how you're doing. That way you can keep moving forward and step up to greatness. Till next time. What's going on, everyone? Dustin here, wanting to say thank you again for checking out my podcast. Be sure to leave a review or comment on this episode on your favorite podcast provider. And be sure to subscribe and share with your friends that you think would find this information useful. In the meantime, keep moving forward and step up to greatness.